Hello, I'm Tom Moan, and today I'm beginning an old and yet continuing adventure. In 1968, my family and I returned to Tulsa, where I became the general manager of KOR-UFM and Oral Roberts, radio announcer. At that time, from 1968 until March of 71, I had a daily program entitled Good Morning, Brother Pilgrim. And now, after 50 years, I'm resurrecting it with a new title, Good Morning, Fellow Pilgrim. And a pilgrim is a person who's on a journey, and in this case, a journey of the kingdom of God on earth as Jesus prayed. So I hope you'll join me as we look into the past, the present, and the future.
This is the Good Morning, Fellow Pilgrim podcast with Tom Moan for July 3rd, 2020. This is the third part of a long-form conversation that began on June 26, 2020, continued into part two on June 29, 2020, and continues today.
Let me ask a question, not only you, Devon, but Paul. I hear oftentimes when I talk to people with addictions, not just alcohol, but others, that there seems to be a difference between religious answers and the reality of Jesus. Would you say that is applicable?
I think that's very applicable because I all during my drinking years, I would have, if someone would have asked me, I would have said, yeah, I'm a Christian. And I would pray, and I would ask the Lord for, I was an alcoholic.
Who loved Jesus,
I guess. Loved Jesus. And the thing was but it was a form of godliness that had no power. Wow. It had no power because I wasn't dealing in reality. And Jesus deals with reality. And I had to come face to face with my own unbelief that growing up, I might have accepted a lot of ideas, but did I really believe what I said I believed? Or was I double-minded and unstable in all my ways?
That's really what Devon has just said, too, isn't it?
And it's a matter of, what do you really believe? Well, when it came down to it, I really believed that God was a great idea and worked most of the time for most people, but it didn't work for me. I needed to have a martini or 10 at night.
Oh, my.
And that helped me to get through the stresses of life because my stresses were so individual and so overwhelming that no one could possibly understand the horrible stuff that I felt inside. No one could it's all that self-pity and all that madness of that small little hamster wheel that your life becomes until it breaks. And by the grace of God, He takes you down to the bottom and you have to say, Father, I want to live. I want to live, but I don't know how to live. And I need You to teach me how to live.
Well, I think this is the point in both your testimonies. What turned the door? You've got six children.
Got six children. I'm.
You're out of work.
I got to several low spots, but probably the lowest spot was I had lost my small business. I had lost my job. I had damaged my shoulder. I was...
I remember that.
Actually, both shoulders. Both shoulders.
I remember.
Had multiple operations. Had been in the hospital multiple times for withdrawal symptoms. All of which, because in alcoholics, they come in... There's a bunch of different kinds. Some folks, when they drink too much, they black out and they keep functioning. But the next day, they don't even know what they were doing.
Yeah.
And it's crazy behavior. Some people just fall asleep. Some people can drink a lot for a long period of time, but when they stop, they'll have a seizure. They'll go into withrawals.
Oh, that's what you had, wasn't
it? That was me because of what I drank and the amount that I drank.
Golly.
And those seizures are deadly. I mean, if trying to get off an alcoholic addiction by yourself is extremely dangerous, and I didn't know this. I grew up watching John Wayne, and I just thought that's what you did. You were in the jailhouse, and you just felt lousy for a while, and by God, you just muscled on through it. And when I woke up and couldn't remember anything, and they took me to the hospital, and I realized what had happened, and I was all busted up. But it got progressively worse until a point where I was. Devon had left. She could not watch me kill myself. She couldn't stand why. And the kids were drifting in and out. I wasn't working. I was stumbling around like a zombie in the house with my bathrobe on.
Oh, my.
And it wasn't life. It wasn't living at all. It was walking death. And the loneliness that I felt, I was afraid of the day. I was afraid of the night. I was afraid the phone to ring. I was afraid of people coming to the door. I was afraid of, I couldn't sit still. I couldn't lay down. It was misery. And it was, and when I've spoken to other alcoholics about that time, to have them understand this is what happens. This is the end result. This is what happens when all the alcohol in the world just doesn't do it anymore, because you're dead inside. Your spirit man is dead.
Oh.
And that's the worst part, because you're dead inside. And there's no light in your eye. There's no light in your life. You're dead.
Because both dead, right, Devon?
Well, at different times. I mean, I was actually, I guess I will say it like this. I was not drinking at that time. So I was functioning. I was doing well in that sense. I guess the way I would say it is sobriety is not just about not drinking. It is so much more. Not drinking is just the beginning, because if I was sober in the sense that I wasn't drinking at that time, but I did not have sobriety of mind or emotional sobriety. Those are two completely different things. And for me, I found that if I do not get well emotionally and spiritually, I will not stay sober physically. And I think you alluded...
excuse my interruption, but one will lead to another.
Yes.
You will be on the juice. Yeah.
Because I will not... I think when I look back on my life and the way I thought, even as a young girl, now that I know what I know, I know that I was an alcoholic.
Even because without the alcohol.
Alcohol is not what makes me an alcoholic. It's my thinking. And I see that I've had that my whole life. And it wasn't, but I don't think I was an alcoholic in the sense what people traditionally think of someone who drinks too much. It wasn't, that switch was not flipped in for me until I was probably 38.
Really?
Yes. I was older, you know, when that happened. So, But because of the way I chose to do things, the switch was flipped and I became powerless. And the thing about alcoholism is you think about drinking, you think about not drinking, and you're always recovering from drinking. And it's like you have no other bandwidth mentally to think about anything else. And I think the religious answers to that are, come on, get over it. Just stop.
Yeah.
Where's your willpower? And what I have learned that this was shocking for me and it actually was very freeing for me though, is it's not a moral issue. It's not a willpower issue. It's actually a mental illness issue. And this may be difficult because we are talking about spiritual things, but the reality is that there were some, I had to make a decision to be willing to change the way I thought about things, because really it's the disease of misperception. The way I reacted to things happening to me, you know, I'm learning that it's not my circumstances, it's not the people around me, it's inside, how am I going to react to all of those things? And the more well that I become, the less I have to manipulate, control, or make everything perfect around me.
So your whole self-protection was a lie.
Yes.
But
the way I functioned in our life was, if I could just hold everything together, because Paul's gone mentally, he's not with me, he's not helping me. If I can just keep everything running, keep all our kids hopefully fed and clothed, hopefully keep this house that we're losing. If I can just keep all of this together, then it will be okay.
Mm.
But I was actually hurting myself by doing that. I don't know.
What would you say? What were you attributing to, I guess as a Christian we say, to your old nature that was going to get you out of it?
I thought if I could just manage well.
Yeah, that's my...
It would be by my performance that I would be saved. But I'm not saved by my performance. Boy. I perform because of the fact that I am saved, but it's not what saves me.
And that
is not what has freed us. And my performance and our daily things that we do is not what keeps us sober emotionally, physically, and spiritually. It is God who keeps us.
Well, but how did this break for both of you? And was there one before another at the same time?
Well, I, through the love of my sister, who came in and just said, you know, I'm going to help you here. And she made sure that I got into a treatment center. And so I went into a 30-day rehab.
I remember that.
And so I... And it was difficult experience because I remember being in my little room there and realizing that I had lost everything, you know. That I really thought that I'd lost my wife, I'd lost my marriage, lost my children, lost my house, lost my job, lost, you know.
All of your relationships.
All my relationships were gone.
I
had nothing, and I felt like and I remember having a conversation with one of my counselors there and just bemoaning the fact of how rough life had been to me and this and that and how, you know, if I would have just, you know, they just didn't understand that I needed to have some kind of a relief. I went on and on and on and on, and finally he just said, this is the way you've been thinking and look where it's gotten you.
Mm.
It's gotten you right into rehab, so it's not working for you. This is exactly what I'm talking about, is your mindset has, your whole mindset is backwards and upside down. Everything's got to be changed. And that didn't make a lot of sense to me, but it makes more sense every day now.
No.
Because what happened for me was I, by the grace of God, I saw the lie. I saw the lie of alcohol.
That's what I wanted to hear from both of you. How did it break for both of you? Did it break over there?
I think it started there, but that was just the beginning. As Devon referred to, when you see that alcohol is not the problem. The problem that's a symptom of the problem. The problem is I've got a misperception. I believe lies about life, about existence, about myself, about my role in the world, about who I am, what I am, about what's really meaningful in the world. I'm all skewed and messed up, and I've got to be
again.
Well, I've got to be born again, but the Holy Spirit had to take a bulldozer and just scrape off the whole entirety of my life and rebuild on a firm foundation.
How did that happen?
It happens every day. It happens right now.
I think for me, just because of how it kind of happened for me is when I let someone take care of me, because I had been really medically actually taking care of Paul through his surgeries, through all of these things that he had been going through. And it was a long time, that at least 3 or 4 years of caretaking and caring for the family. You know, and then when he got well and I fell apart, that I was able to let someone, he took me to the hospital. And that was the first time that it ever happened.
Paul
took me to the hospital.
I didn't know that.
I think that's where, when I didn't feel like I had to do it all myself or hide it, or I don't really know, but I think going to the hospital and him taking care of me was a turning point for me to truly getting sober, and not just getting sober, but staying sober. And that was a big thing for me, as I thought, you know, because I want to drink. I mean, it's fun. I want to drink socially. I want to have fun with those things. And to imagine a life without alcohol, I could not even begin. It was a trigger for me.
Really?
When I started thinking about not drinking, well, I'm going to go drink now. I couldn't imagine life without it. But that was a lie in my own head that I was believing. But as I, back to the hospital, I think that was where, and having someone take care of me and not just doing it on my own. I don't know why it, and I think maybe it was time. It was time. And sometimes I don't understand the time it takes for us, why sometimes it takes years. Well, you know, but people have to come to it on their own. All the arguing, you know, even in our own relationship, all my arguing and pleading with Paul to stop, all the, you know, different people coming in and trying to intervene and telling us what to do, none of that worked. None of it. And it's like we had to come to, everyone has their own bottom, if you will.
Yes.
And we kind of had to come to those. And I saw that it was just, it wasn't, when I realized that Paul was not the reason I drank, and I owned my part, and saw that I was the problem. Because I think we've talked about this before, you know, we are, you know, as we're going through things, we're asked to write down what our triggers are or all of our things around us. What can set us off into drinking? And I started thinking, well, you know, it's not my husband anymore. He's actually safe for me to be around. My kids are safe. My home environment is safe. My work's safe. My family, they're good. And it's like, start eliminating all these different aspects. I actually have very amazing friends and family. And I just was like, oh my gosh, it's me. I think I'm the wild card in this scenario.
Well, that was
a huge awakening of awareness for me that I'm the problem.
And that is the end of part 3 of our conversation with Paul and Devon. We continue on the next podcast, July 6th, 2020. This podcast is available for free download in iTunes and at moanministriesbookstore.com. Sarah Rahm's album, Days of Rain, is available on iTunes and most streaming platforms.